sun breaks as our eyes meet the day. We stretch our limbs as our dreams drift away. We hold on to the last few seconds of sleep like a memory. We long to
thank you. going to read this bit of scripture together. It'll be up on there if you can see it. Read along. If not, I'm sorry. He was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. Feel free to say. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter,
and as a sheep is silent before the shearers, and he did not open his
all the lies so mixed up. Friday. Thomas! The voice startled the gentle silence like a stone collapsing into the stillness of a pool surface. It's Peter. Judas is dead. My brain was still sliding back into sync, and it took a few seconds before I could appreciate the severity of what he had said. He hung himself. The words sunk into my mind less like audible sounds than like a blow to the gut. Judas had always been so removed. He was one of us, but he rarely got caught up in the sort of rapturous excitement the rest of us were given to. He always kept a distance and approached things like miracles and prophecies with a sort of distant intellectualism. I couldn't believe that he could be so overwhelmed as to kill himself over what had been going on. Word is, he hung himself in a field he bought near the city gate, Peter explained. What a tragedy. Don't feel too badly for him. The snake was betraying us. The Pharisees paid him off to give up Jesus. That's where he got the money for the field. What? Judas? I said, unable to form the words with anything more than a whisper. It doesn't seem possible. Don't you remember what Jesus said at Passover? Don't you remember Judas showing up with the soldiers last night? Judas took the cash and turned us in. And now he's dead. Yeah, now he's dead and good riddance. It doesn't surprise me that I couldn't recall what Judas had done. The events of those 2 days are still concealed in a dense fog that my memory struggles to cut through. I remember dinner. I remember drinking too much wine. I remember climbing the hills to the Garden of Gethsemane. I remember falling asleep when we were supposed to keep guard. I remember soldiers, shouts, blood, fear, the heat of torches, the weakness of my legs as I ran and ran and ran. I found this place to hide. It's an insignificant little shed, shadowed behind the home of one of my father's business associates. He's away for the Passover celebration, so I knew that no one would stumble upon my quivering cowardice in this forgotten corner of his property. Peter knew to find me here because I told him where I would be when I ran into him this morning, when I ventured out to the courts to find out what was happening. I did my best to shield my face as I neared the crowds. Their collective anger was so venomous that I could feel it tangibly crawling across my skin. People said horrible things, made wild accusations, and called for blood. I wanted to shout, but my throat was seized with the fear of being thrown into the arena and put on trial as well. I snaked my way through the crowd to where I was able to gain a view of what was going on. I saw him there. He was a mere shadow of the man I had known these last 3 years. His clothes were torn, his back a mesh of mangled flesh, his hair tangled and matted by blood and sweat, and his eyes, once so full of both fire and compassion, seemed to be glued to the patch of dusty ground directly in front of his feet. Questions were hurled at him with vicious intent, accusation that could be easily defended, but he just stood there. He seemed to feel no compunction to make a statement about his own defense. In my mind, I kept trying to will him to action. Didn't he know that these men were evil? Didn't he know that if he didn't stand up for himself, they would kill him, and then us, and then his whole message would be lost? I felt sick to my stomach as I thought about traveling back to my family. My old friends, my employer, all of them had said that I was insane to follow this nobody from a backward town. I was openly mocked for being foolish enough to believe in another lunatic calling himself the Messiah. But I did believe in him. I could never shake the feeling that this man was not just another prophet from the wilderness. Every time he spoke, I could feel the power in his voice. The wisdom he doled out seemed otherworldly. Those of us who called ourselves his followers had never heard ideas that were at once utter foolishness and blindingly brilliant. Everyone is your neighbor, even those who despise you. Turn the other cheek when you are struck. The meek shall inherit the earth. These ideas sound like complete nonsense, and yet I cannot even recall the endless times he countered the hate of the powerful with love and consistently won them over. At times it felt like it was only a matter of weeks or months before a revolution would come. Jesus would be crowned King of the Jews, and together we would drive the filthy Romans from our promised land. Just last Sunday, in fact, I think Jesus had a real chance of taking over Jerusalem. The crowds lined up to worship him with palm leaves. But of course, he messed that up too. We tried to get him the strongest horse we could find. Our plan was to parade him in like a conquering hero to show his strength and our unwavering support he had from the people. Instead, he sent us to pick up a feeble, broken-down ass. And that was what he rode into the city. He looked like an overgrown child riding a pony that was about to drop dead. He made a spectacle, all right. He rode in like the king of the fools. The Pharisees and the Roman sentries laughed at him. They scoffed at the people worshiping this idiotic-looking savior covered in filth. And of course, this morning, when he was standing before that Roman bureaucrat, the one they call Pilate, he wouldn't speak. "You have said so." That was his only reply when Pilate asked if he was the king of the Jews. The rest of the time, he just stood there. He stared at the ground, silent. Even as the crowd cried for his blood, he was meek, but he didn't inherit the earth. Instead, he inherited 40 blood-curdling lashes. He inherited a cross and a few nails. He inherited the darkness of solitude, of an unmarked tomb. He inherited obscurity, another wild prophet that the world will soon forget. "Listen," Peter said, interrupting my thoughts. "A few of us are gathering in town. You'd better come along. We'll have a better chance of making a next step if we're all together." "What next step?" I questioned. "We're through. I saw him die. He was hanging there. His body was dripping like a slab of meat from a butcher's window. We were wrong. We followed a lunatic, and now he's dead. We'll be better off if we all just head back to our homes and hope that no one notices our movements. I'm sure the Romans will be tracking us. They don't like little insurrections like ours." "Thomas, you can't give up now." "Why? You've already given up, Peter. I was there by the fire last night. You didn't see me, but I saw you. And I heard what you said. I heard you deny him to those people. You want to distance yourself from this just as much as I do. Don't make another denial." Peter's shoulders drooped as a contrite breath slowly exited his lungs. It took nearly a full minute before he lifted his eyes to mine. "We'll be at the same place in town. The inn at the edge of the city, if you change your mind. I'll be back there in about an hour." "Thanks. I think I'll stay here until I can head home tomorrow morning. I hope that my old employer will take me back. I need to start living a real life again. There is nothing but death here."
I'm just going to read this next passage together from Isaiah 53:12. "I will give him the honors of a victorious soldier. because he exposed himself to death.
He is counted among the rebels. He bore the sins of many and interceded for rebels.
Thank you. else in the room that morning, I had nowhere and no one to return to. And yet, I was getting the feeling that I was the least of us interested in finding a way to go back. Peter seemed to possess an endless stream of ideas, which he spit out with increasing ferocity as he called for everything from grave robbing to a flat-out denial that we had had any association with Jesus. Bartholomew suggested that we meet with the religious leaders as soon as we could to beg forgiveness so that at least our lives would be spared. Matthew confessed that he had been thinking of ways to get his old job back as a tax collector once the fervor had died down. Simon sat silently most of the time, but his rage flared up every time a Roman guard would pass our hiding place. Occasionally he would charge the door, thirsty for bloody revenge, and would have to be held back until his nerves were calmed. As I listened to their arguments, my mind drifted away. My imagination began to reconstruct the garden outside the cave where he had been placed. I saw the flower beds crowded with perfectly manicured wildflowers set in between gentle desert shrubs and leafy leaves, trees. The garden's perimeter, determined by a stone wall which had been formed out of natural rock formations, and within these rocks, a series of small caves had been fashioned into a carefully kept mausoleum. It is there that Jesus' body was placed. The tomb was donated, and to ensure that none of us could get at the body, the Romans had moved an imposing and immovable boulder in front of the entryway so that he, the one who was so eager to connect with all that he met, would be cut off from the rest of humanity for all eternity. In my mind, I wandered through the garden. I felt the grass brush against my feet and stooped down to absorb the scent of the flowers. I seemed to float, moving past the heavy stone that guarded the entryway, and I looked down at him, crushed, shrunken, and alone in the blackness that engulfed us. I desired to tear away the rags and bandages that swaddled his crippled bones and stare one more time at his face, even though I knew that it would hardly resemble the face I had known, that his eyes would lack their spark, his lips would be cracked dry, and his tongue would never again form the beautiful, eloquent words that had given me the hope I needed to abandon the life that had been killing me, to follow him through the deserts and the cities where it seemed equal measures of grace, fear, love, hatred, life, and death were constantly waiting for him. I placed my hands on his tightly wrapped feet, the feet that I had anointed with my tears on the day we met, the feet I would have followed for the rest of my life. My daydream shifted and I began to wonder where he might be. If it is true that the dead can see the living, I wanted to know if Jesus would take the time to look in on me in my misery, or did he have more important things to do? I heard him speaking to one of the other men hanging yesterday. Jesus told the man that they would be together in paradise that very night. Did Jesus really have the power to grant access to paradise? Was he constructing a new Garden of Eden somewhere far off, perhaps in the other life? Once Jesus told me about some time he had spent in the wilderness. He had had nothing to eat or drink for 40 days and was nearing death. He told me he was visited by a great evil as he held on to the last vestiges of his life in a small cave on the edge of the wasteland. He said it was the same spirit that had tempted Eve with the fruit. The spirit tempted Jesus in much the same way, with food and wealth and power. I began wondering if Jesus might encounter this tempter, this accuser, this solicitor of evil, as he wandered the place of the dead. I hoped that Jesus would remember me to this spirit and free me from the sins that were being held against me in the ether of death. I wanted to believe that Jesus would unlock the doors of paradise and allow me in. I was shaken from my thoughts by Thomas, who was once again making it clear that we were fools, all of us, to be considering anything other than a return to the lives we had before we joined the cause. Jesus is dead, he declared, and you will be soon if you don't wise up and get away from this city. But I couldn't contemplate any sort of return. My life before held nothing but fear and loathing. I could never return to the lecherous eyes of desperate men, the angry voices of pimps and dealers, the disgusting habits of heathen priests, or the judgmental and hate-filled words of the righteous religious leaders. Now that I had experienced the grace, the love, and the hope that came from my time with Jesus, I could not picture any sort of life without it. Even if in those anxious moments all I really knew was fear, fear that we would receive equal punishment, fear of returning to my former life, fear that I had been wrong and that the universe was as empty as it felt in those darkest of days. Yet no force could separate me from those fears, because I knew that the authenticity of these emotions was a fleeting sign that a return to love I craved remained elusively tangible.